Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. A recent New York Times article brought my attention to an issue that I'd never been made aware of before. It was admittedly rather shocking, yet given a moment to think about it, it made perfect sense. As the population of boomers and other elders grows, the population of elders in prison must grow as well. Today's program will focus on the problems inherent in housing elders, the infirm, cognitively impaired, and terminally ill in prisons. Articles include, from Reuters, New York put spotlight on graying of U.S. prison population by Mark Miller, March 8, 2018. From the New York Times, frail, old, and dying, but their only way out of prison is in a coffin by Christine Thompson, March 7, 2018. And portions of Model Nursing Home for Paroled Inmates to Get Federal Funds by Adam Wazinski, April 2017, from Connecticut's Health I Team. Starting with New York, plan put spotlight on graying U.S. prison population. Does it make financial and moral sense to keep elderly people in prison? The state of New York is asking that question, and the debate there should be a harbinger of a much-needed national conversation. The American prison population is getting older. The number of prisoners serving longer sentences has risen, and there has been an increase in admissions of older people, according to a 2016 study by the U.S. Department of Justice. 11% of the U.S. state and federal prison population was over age 55 in 2016. That translates to roughly 160,000 people and 38,000 people over age 65. The American Civil Liberties Union projects that by 2030, more than one-third of the U.S. prison population will be over age 55, more than 400,000 people. This elder incarceration boom poses serious moral and ethical questions. What is the purpose of keeping people in prison well beyond the point where they pose risks to society, beyond raw punishment? And keeping the elderly locked up is much more expensive than younger inmates, due mainly to the cost of medication and other health care services. In 2015-2016, the cost of health care in New York State prisons totaled $380.6 million, up 20% from 3 years earlier. States bear the entire cost of prisoners' health care since the incarcerated are not eligible to participate in Medicaid, which is funded jointly by the states and the federal government. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has proposed a geriatric parole program for prisoners aged 55 and over as part of a broader criminal justice reform plan that is under discussion as part of the state's budget process. Prisoners who suffer from serious illness and cannot take care of themselves would be eligible for the program if they have served at least half of their sentences. Those convicted of murder or aggravated murder and inmates serving life without parole would not be eligible. Prison reform advocates say the plan is a step in the right direction, but does not go far enough. Release Aging People in Prison, or RAP, a New York-based advocacy group, estimates that Cuomo's plan would affect fewer than 1,000 prisoners because it excludes some people based on their crime, no matter how ill they might be. It guarantees that some people will die in prison no matter what their condition, said Laura Whitehorn, a formerly incarcerated woman who is now an organizer with the group. And that is where this issue gets really difficult. The national debate about ending mass incarceration often focuses on reducing arrest and incarceration of nonviolent drug offenders. But the elderly prison population is composed largely of violent offenders. Advocates like Whitehorn are pushing for parole reforms that would at least give these prisoners an opportunity for review of their cases to assess what risks, if any, they pose to the community. Very few older prisoners commit crimes after they are released. In New York State, just 5% of released prisoners aged 50 to 64 returned to prison for new offenses. Among those age 65 or higher, the rate of new offense is just 0.6%. The numbers are higher when parole violations are included. Among offenders convicted of murder, just 1.9% committed new crimes following release from 1985 to 2012, according to state data. In New York State, the overall prison population fell 17% from 2007 through 2016 to about 52,000, according to a report last year by the New York State Comptroller. At the same time, the number of inmates age 50 or higher rose by 46% to more than 10,000. The report does not cite specific figures for the cost of health care for older inmates, but overall health care expenses for the state's prison population 2015 to 16 were 20% higher than 3 years earlier. Prison accelerates the aging process. Research shows that inmates are often 10 years older from a physiological standpoint than their actual ages, and they get sicker at earlier ages than the general population, with higher overall rates of cognitive impairment and dementia in particular. The Supreme Court last week agreed to hear the case of an Alabama inmate on death row who suffers from dementia and can no longer recall the crime or murder conviction that sent him there. Just as difficult are the questions about how to provide housing, health care, and even basic income to elderly prisoners upon release. In New York State, many ex-offenders wind up in homeless shelters or on the streets. Very often, they do not have sufficient working history to qualify for Medicare or Social Security, and those still on parole are not eligible for Medicare. Many parolees are eligible for Medicaid, but most face big challenges navigating the health care system. People are not released with any experience using our medical system, said Elizabeth Gaines, CEO of the Osborne Association, a New York-based criminal justice reform group. Osborne, which runs a broad array of programs to help prisoners coming home, is developing an elder reentry initiative that assesses the health of prisoners before release, helps prepare them for life on the outside, and connects them to needed services. But transition programs will not do much good unless political leaders step up to the plate on the tough questions concerning incarceration of the elderly. We need to ask, what is the purpose of incarceration, said Whitehorn. If political leaders want to get us out of the morass of mass incarceration, they can't keep doing the things that got us into it. If they do want to change this, they have to show some backbone and go by the science, the evidence, and the truth. And now from the New York Times, Frail, Old, and Dying, But Their Only Way Out of Prison is in a Coffin, by Christine Thompson. Kevin Zeech had 3.5 years to go on his prison sentence, but his doctors told him he had less than half that long to live. Nearly blind, battling cancer, and virtually unable to eat, he requested compassionate release, a special provision for inmates who are very sick or old. His warden approved the request, but officials at the Federal Bureau of Prisons turned him down, saying his life expectancy is currently indeterminate. Well, Congress created compassionate release as a way to free certain inmates, such as the terminally ill, when it becomes inequitable to keep them in prison any longer. Supporters view the program as a humanitarian measure and a sensible way to reduce health care costs for ailing elderly inmates who pose little risk to public safety. But despite urging from lawmakers of both parties, numerous advocacy groups, and even the Bureau of Prisons' own watchdog, prison officials use it only sparingly. Officials deny or delay the vast majority of requests, including that of one of the oldest federal prisoners who was 94, according to new federal data analyzed by the Marshall Project and the New York Times. From 2013 to 2017, the Bureau of Prisons approved 6% of the 5,400 applications received, while 266 inmates who requested compassionate release died in custody. The Bureau's denials, a review of dozens of cases shows, often override the opinions of those closest to the prisoners, like their doctors and wardens. Advocates for the program say the Bureau, which oversees 183,000 inmates, denies thousands of deserving applicants. Roughly half of those who died after applying were convicted of nonviolent fraud or drug crimes. It makes sense to release prisoners who present very little danger to society. It's the humane thing to do, and it's fiscally responsible, said Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii, a Democrat. The Bureau of Prisons has the theoretical authority to do this, but they basically do none of it. Case files show that prison officials reject many prisoners' applications on the grounds that they pose a risk to public safety or that their crime was too serious to justify early release. In 2013, an inspector general reported that nearly 60% of inmates were denied based on the severity of their offense or criminal history. The United States Sentencing Commission has said that such considerations are better left to judges, but judges can rule on compassionate release requests only if the Bureau of Prisons approves them first. Late last month, Mr. Schatz introduced legislation co-sponsored with Senator Mike Lee of Utah, a Republican, and Patrick Leahy of Vermont, a Democrat, that would let prisoners petition the courts directly if the Bureau denies or delays their requests. Many are turned down for not meeting medical requirements. Mr. Zeech, who was serving 27 years for dealing methamphetamine, requested compassionate release 3 times, but was repeatedly told he was not sick enough. On his 4th try, his daughter, Kimberly Heraldez, finally received a phone call in March of 2016 saying her father would soon be on a plane headed to her home in California. Early the next morning, she was awakened by another call. Her father had died. Mr. Zeech's ashes now sit in a container in her closet alongside the splitting cardboard box of his possessions that he had in prison, an insulin pump, glasses, stacks of medical records, and an album filled with photos of Ms. Heraldez and her 3 children. "We brought him home," she said, "but not the way we wanted to." I begged then. When Anthony Bell applied for compassionate release in October 2014, he had served all but 1 of his 16-year sentence for selling cocaine. Prison doctors treating his lupus and liver failure estimated that he had less than 6 months to live. It took about that long for the Bureau to hand down its response. Denied. After reading Mr. Bell's medical records, officials concluded that he had more than 18 months to live. 2 days later, he died. "I begged them to please get him home," said Mr. Bell's sister, Denise Littleford of Gaithersburg, Maryland. "And while the blood was still warm in his body, instead of sending him home in a body bag." Compassionate release dates back to an overhaul of federal sentencing laws in the 1980s. While abolishing federal parole, Congress supplied a safety valve, giving judges the power to retroactively cut sentences short in extraordinary and compelling circumstances. But a court could do so only if the Bureau of Prisons filed a motion on an inmate's behalf. For years, the agency approved only prisoners who were near death or completely debilitated. While non-medical releases were permitted, an inspector general report found that in 2013, not a single one was approved over a 6-year period. The report said the program should be expanded beyond terminal illness cases and used more frequently as a low-risk way to reduce overcrowding and healthcare spending. The Bureau of Prisons widened the criteria to explicitly include inmates over 65 and those who are the sole possible caregiver for a family member. Then Attorney General Eric H. Holder Jr. promoted the changes as part of his Smart on Crime initiative to use our limited resources to house those who pose the greatest threat. But the Bureau, which is part of the Justice Department, has yet to fully embrace those changes. Of those inmates who have applied for non-medical reasons, 2%, 50 cases, have been approved since 2013, according to an analysis of federal prison data. And although overall approval numbers increased slightly between 2013 and 2015, they have since fallen. A 2016 Sentencing Commission hearing, prison bureau officials said they believed the program should not be used to reduce overcrowding. And even the principal deputy assistant to Mr. Holder, Jonathan Robluski, said the program was not an appropriate vehicle for a broad reduction in the prison population. Every administration has taken the position that part of our responsibility is to ensure that public safety is not undermined, he said. After the hearing, the commission released new guidelines encouraging prison officials to determine only whether inmates fit the criteria for release. That is, if they are old enough, sick or disabled enough, or if they are the sole possible caregiver for someone on the outside. Whether the prisoner poses a risk to the public should be left to a judge to decide, the commission said. Mark Inch, who was appointed director of the Bureau of Prisons by Attorney General Jeff Sessions last August, has made no public statements about the program. The Bureau declined to make Mr. Inch available for an interview and did not respond to emailed questions. Dying in shackles. The inmates who meet the criteria for compassionate release tend to be among the oldest and frailest in the federal prison system, whose population is getting older and more expensive. The Bureau of Prisons spent $1.3 billion on health care in fiscal year 2016. Roughly 12% of prisoners are 55 or older, and of those, many will spend their final years behind bars, some dying in shackles. When Andrew Schiff arrived at a medical facility for inmates to say his goodbyes, his dying 87-year-old father was unconscious and on a respirator. Yet, he was handcuffed to the hospital bed and under 24-hour watch by an armed guard, according to Mr. Schiff. "There's no humanity in there," he said. His father, Erwin Schiff, had less than 2 years left on his sentence for tax fraud. He had tried and failed for 2 years to win compassionate release. To win approval, an inmate must get the blessing of the prison warden and must have an acceptable home waiting. Doctors at the facility assess whether the applicant meets the medical criteria, such as being completely disabled or having fewer than 18 months to live. If the warden signs off, the application gets passed on to the Bureau of Prisons Central Office, which has its own medical director review the records. Even after the Central Office approves, the Deputy Attorney General may object. If approved, the request is passed on to a judge who makes the ultimate decision. An analysis of federal prison data shows that it takes over 6 months on average for an inmate to receive an answer from the Bureau. Almost 400 of the applications the Bureau received between 2013 and 2017 are still awaiting a decision. Pushing for change. Most state prison systems have some version of compassionate release, sometimes known as medical parole. Nationally, prisons are facing an explosion of elderly inmates, but officials can still be wary of the idea of letting them out early. Recently, a Senate committee in South Dakota turned down the prison system's request to establish a similar program, citing concern over releasing violent offenders. In recent months, both Democratic and Republican lawmakers have called on the Bureau of Prisons to speed up the federal process and grant more requests. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, Republican, pressed the Bureau for details on how it was improving the process in a report he submitted with the 2018 Appropriations Bill. A bipartisan group of senators, led by Mr. Schatz of Hawaii, wrote a letter last August saying that they were deeply concerned that the Bureau was failing to carry out its duties under the program. The Justice Department's Office of Legislative Affairs issued a response in January, citing approval rates that were slightly higher than those reflected in the data provided by the Bureau of Prisons to the Marshall Project and the New York Times. The Bureau did not explain this discrepancy. The January letter stated that cases were most commonly denied because inmates did not meet the criteria or lacked a stable place to live if they were released. But in 2016, officials turned down one of the oldest federal prisoners, 94-year-old Carlos Tapia Ponce, on the grounds that his crime, a role in a large-scale cocaine trafficking operation, was too serious. He died the following month. Tommy Lefwich died in prison last September. He had been serving 12 years for making meth when he was diagnosed with advanced liver cancer. The Bureau said in October 2016 that his early release would minimize the severity of his offense and pose a risk to the community, noting a history of drug offenses and impaired driving. Wayne Akbar Prey, 69, who had served nearly 30 years of a life sentence for running a New Jersey cocaine operation in the 1980s, first applied for compassionate release under the elderly inmate provision in 2013. His supporters included his warden, the current and former mayors of Newark, the local NAACP, and several former members of Newark law enforcement. In January, the Bureau denied his request, pointing to the severity of his crime and his conduct in prison. According to his disciplinary history, Mr. Prey's last violation was 20 years ago for improperly storing property and failure to follow sanitation procedures. Anna Flagg contributed to this reporting. Christine Thompson is staff writer, and Anna, an interactive reporter for the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization that focuses on criminal justice issues. And now, from the Connecticut Health Eye Team, portions of Model Nursing Home for Paroled Inmates to Get Federal Funds by Adam Wazinski. Inside the 60 West Nursing Home in Rocky Hill, two residents played solitaire to the sound of soul music. Others sat in wheelchairs beneath a simulation of rolling clouds, while one got a haircut in a barbershop decorated with Red Sox posters. From the outside, the 95-bed single-story facility set back from the road looks like any other nursing home. But many of the elderly and ill residents are actually paroled prisoners, and the home is being watched nationally as a potential game changer for states grappling for ways to care for their aging inmate populations. 60 West is the first facility in the country to win approval from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, for federal nursing home funding. A designation that has national significance, experts say, because it's a new option for cash-strapped states looking for ways to care for growing populations of older and sicker inmates. Tina Maskey, a Fordham University professor and former prison social worker who studies aging prisoners, said that the state responded to a difficult problem of caring for seriously terminally ill prisoners, and its approach managed to survive despite community pushback. This program is a role model. In addition to funding concerns, caring for the growing population of elderly prisoners is difficult because prison infirmaries were not designed to serve chronically ill people or people who need hospice care, said Judith Dowd, Director of Health and Human Services for the state's Office of Policy and Management. Connecticut is not alone in dealing with growing numbers of elderly prisoners, due largely to the tough-on-crime laws of the 1980s and 90s and strict release policies. The percentage of older prisoners behind bars nationally has exploded in the past decade, experts say. The crisis has states scrambling to come up with ideas to lower costs. Many of 60 West residents are on nursing home release parole, a form of parole the state legislature created in 2013. To qualify, the DOC must determine that inmates are suffering from a terminal condition, disease, or syndrome and be physically incapable of presenting a danger to society. The offenders are so medically compromised that they don't have the physical ability to commit a crime, said Dr. Kathleen Maurer, DOC's Director of Health Services. The idea for the facility began under former Governor Jody Rell. Inmates eligible for release often languished in prison as nursing homes refused referrals, and the DOC and the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, DMHAS. There are others. At least three other states, Kentucky, Michigan, and Wisconsin, have explored creating facilities like 60 West, but some have been waiting to see how the CMS approval would play out. Al Skolka, a former Republican state representative from Michigan, introduced a bill last year that would have permitted medically frail inmates to be cared for in licensed health care facilities rather than prison. The bill passed the House but did not make it through the Senate because of funding concerns. Other states are taking different approaches. Missouri is modifying prison housing units to accommodate disabled inmates. Virginia has a designated assisted living unit inside a prison to care for infirm and geriatric inmates. New York has a prison unit for cognitively impaired. And Iowa opened a prison hospice unit. Nevada now has a preventive health program called True Grit for inmates over 55. 60 West is not the first Connecticut innovation to address the aging prison population. The state is one of few with a prison hospice program in which fellow inmates care for dying prisoners. In the 3.5 years since 60 West opened, state officials say no criminal incidents have been reported. In fact, there hasn't even been a workers' comp claim. Currently, 72 residents live at 60 West, 45 referred from DMHAS, which includes referrals from inpatient psychiatric units. Jessica Ring, the administrator of 60 West, said that the staff members know where the residents come from so that they can accommodate their needs, but they don't necessarily know their histories. From our end, these are nursing home residents, she said, and they are here, and we will take care of them. Well, that's some interesting information, and I'm sure that I will be able to give you more information as more appears in the articles that I peruse. So, thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.